is Spouting Off with Karen Cataline. She's a columnist, commentator, and sought-after guest on talk radio programs around the country. She has a master's degree from Columbia University and an operatic voice that can shatter glass. Here's your host of Spouting Off, Karen Cataline.
Hello, everybody. This is Chuck Bonnewell and Julie Hayden subbing in for Karen today. We have our own show on BBS at 3 o'clock on Monday,
Denver
Wednesday.
Time.
Denver time, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So we'd love to have you as one of our listeners also.
Yeah, just go to chuckandjulie.com, and that'll get you to everything.
And one of the ones we're going to have today, we're going to have Michael Tao on, and we want to introduce as many people as we can to Michael. If you go to our show, where you probably know Michael. In fact, I'm sure you know Michael, but a lot of people don't, and they need to. He's got a great website called clearpicture.net, and you'll learn incredible amount of stuff. He's got double degrees from Princeton and God knows what.
And I'm starting as a columnist for Red State, if I can ever finish my first column.
And so he's
on with us today, and we wanted to talk with him about the amazing revelation that came out when they declassified a lot of the transcripts from people 17 and 18. And one of those was Sean Henry, the head of CrowdStrike. And CrowdStrike is the one the DNC brought in to investigate what had happened.
The alleged Russia hack.
The alleged Russia hack. Now, Michael has done yeoman's work, incredible work, showing that he thought that it was highly unlikely that the Russians hacked in.
Well, let me hit this. One of his first columns that we talked to him about, which was on AM Greatness, was the Russia hack that wasn't.
Right. So have you read the Sean Henry transcript?
Oh, yeah, I read it the other day. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's just so there's no reason to believe the Russians downloaded any documents from the DNC server. I mean, that's what Henry said. And it explains something. So in the Mueller indictments and in the Mueller indicted 13 Russian alleged spies for hacking the DNC. And he says in there, they seem to have downloaded the it's all qualified. And he says, we can't rule out that a transfer was made in person on a certain date either. And he says, they seem to have downloaded. And now we know why he had to say that, because the CrowdStrike report he was relying on has no evidence that he actually, anything was downloaded. But it's much worse than that. There's stuff people aren't reporting on. So Henry says that on the 22nd of April, they do have evidence that the files were compiled, that the files were put together. I shouldn't use that term. It's going to be confusing later. He says that they have evidence on the 22nd of April, the hackers put the files they were going to steal together. They just don't know if they sold them. But the thing is, the earliest Fancy Bear compile date on any of the software that CrowdStrike has told us about was the 25th. After the 22nd. So that's one thing. So his claim about the 22nd, maybe there's some software that was on there that they haven't mentioned. But everything that they've mentioned from Fancy Bear, the earliest compile date was the 25th, 3 days later. So it's hard to see how they could have done anything before they even compiled the...
Right. Well, let me.
But the second thing is, everything that was stolen after then, while CrowdStrike was monitoring the system. So, which a lot of it was in the transcript of Henry is already known from newspaper articles and magazine articles. But now we've got it under oath. So, it's
right.
A lot really good to have like that. We've sort of known this for a while, but now under oath, he said, like, look, on March 1st, we started monitoring the system, but all the DNC emails were stolen after that. Like, literally, they're dated after that. Like
right.
Many. So you don't even. So you can go to a fancy analysis and you can show that they were all stolen after that. But you don't even need that. A bunch of them are just dated after
right.
that. After CrowdStrike was on the server. So how did the Russians? I suspect the Russians. And that's another thing. So the FBI in like September, October, November, and December, I think it was, calls up some vendor that's doing security for the DNC and says, we think the Russians have hacked your system. And then they wait till April 30th to bring in crowds. It's preposterous. They wait till April. I mean, if it's true, they shouldn't be running for political office. They're incompetent. But it seems, I don't think they're that incompetent. It's preposterous that they could have waited that long, really? So the FBI's
Here's the thing. So folks who aren't totally as up to speed on it, again, and this is something that Michael raised years ago, saying that no one ever hacked the DNC. So what we have is the FBI acknowledging that they never actually searched the DNC server, that they just based the information on the fact that CrowdStrike told them that the Russians hacked it. What we have now found out is that actually what CrowdStrike says is, no, the Russians didn't hack it. And actually,
they have no proof.
We have no evidence that the Russians hacked it.
The dates of the emails, it happened when. So you call up a firm, you say, we think 5 months ago they told us the Russians hacked us. We're finally getting around to bringing you guys in here. We'd like you to do something about it. Sure. Well, we'd like to watch them seal some stuff for 6 weeks before
we hack. And then we're going to get all upset about it.
Before we put up a firewall, before we stop it. So if you take this seriously, which obviously shouldn't, but if you really believe there was a hack, then the evidence is CrowdStrike was in on it. I mean, that's really the only conclusion you could seriously draw.
Which is another point you had, that Guccifer 2 was maybe CrowdStrike itself.
Oh, it has to be. And DC Leaks was definitely the same thing. Guccifer 2.0. This is another thing about Mueller. So Guccifer 2.0. So on June 12th, 2016, Julian Assange says, in an interview, I'm going to be releasing something. We have now in our possession emails relating to Hillary Clinton that we're going to be releasing very soon that are going to be really bad, right? So that happens June 12th. 2 days later, June 14th, CrowdStrike has an article published in the Washington Post where they spill the beans on a Russian hack.
DNC.
Now, the first thing you got to do when you read a newspaper article is say, why do they want me to know this? Like, why? This is bad information. Why would the DNC want people to know that they were incompetent enough, that their internet security was bad enough to let the Russians in? Well, then a day later, we sort of found out. Day later, this guy, Guccifer 2.0, comes out and says, I am the hacker from the Washington Post story on yesterday. I stole the files, right? And
I'm Russian. I'm a Russian spy.
No, I said Romanian.
A Romanian spy.
Not a Russian.
Russians, right? Guccifer 2, Mueller claims Guccifer 2 is working with Russians. But the thing is, and passing documents to WikiLeaks. So Guccifer 2 says, Mueller says Guccifer 2 is a Russian spy passing documents to WikiLeaks. But the thing is, Guccifer 2 went on said he passed the documents to WikiLeaks. Why would a Russian spy? And Mueller doesn't mention that. He's got, well, we have this complex evidence that Guccifer 2.0 was passing documents to WikiLeaks. And I'm like, well, he's 11 times. He, like, three times he officially said he was passing documents to him. And I think 8 other times he did shout outs to WikiLeaks.
Right.
Why are you asking that, Bob?
Right. Well, and here's the thing. And you go back to Mueller knew.
People realize it's a frame up.
Mueller knew. They had that information. They had the testimony from CrowdStrike saying, so let's back up. CrowdStrike says on the record, secretly to Congress, we have no evidence that Russia hacked anything. But meanwhile, everybody is reporting all of this stuff that Russia hacked it. Mueller's investigating that Russia's hacked it. You've got all these people.
And it's all used to get people to not pay attention to the negative stuff about Hillary Clinton. This is the other thing everyone has to realize. All this stuff about the Russian hack, it serves one purpose in the national dialogue. It's the only thing it's ever really done is to get people to ignore all the proof that about Hillary Clinton's incompetence and poor character that WikiLeaks released. That's the only thing it's ever done.
Well, then it's morphed into a whole Trump
thing. We're here with Michael Tao. He's an investigative journalist and expert on a lot of things, but in particular the purported hack on DNC.
Not even purported, the fake hack.
There may have been. So Assange claims that, everybody was in the DNC servers. Like,
Assange says, our little boy was. He was.
The question that we really face is, were the WikiLeaks releases hacked by Russia and passed on? And that seems, this is another thing about Mueller. So we now find out he had no proof that the Russians had passed the stuff to WikiLeaks.
But he knew the 13 people who did it.
But he never interviewed us. He never. So there's one person who may have proof and be able to answer the question. Julian Assange.
But we never have asked him. No,
Mueller has never. This should be enough by itself. How do you go through an investigation and not interview the key witness to the central event in your entire report? You make no attempt to interview the key witness. And we know the key witness has denied it. In fact, we know in January 2017, when Trump started, Assange reached out to the DOJ to craft a deal for limited immunity. And he said, look, I'm not going to tell you my source, but I'm going to give you enough evidence that it's not the Russians. That I can do. Right. And as soon as Comey heard about it, he told, the words were stand down. He told the Justice Department negotiator to stand down. So they're not interested. It's bad enough, even if they did, CrowdStrike did allegedly have proof. Still, you interview the only witness. I mean, how do you not?
Right.
Now it's like they didn't even have proof and they didn't interview.
Well, this is even worse.
Mueller, this is the thing, too. Mueller's investigation has to be seen as a continuation of Crossfire Harry.
Well, you know, another thing about Sean Henry, the head of CrowdStrike, he's a former FBI agent. And
promoted by Mueller.
Yeah, by Mueller. So as a practical matter, another thing in the transcripts is they had the person from the DNC come on, and she said, no, the FBI never wanted to see the server. I invited them to see the server. And they said, no, we don't need the server. We've got plenty what we have. So forget about that. And that's notwithstanding Comey's direct testimony to Congress that they repeatedly asked.
Three times he testified. Three occasions he did.
Right. Testified. So, I believe Comey, because, God, how can you not believe Comey? I mean, you know, is the FBI head?
Well, not just that. The day after, I think it's a week before Comey's first testimony, a source from the FBI told, I think it was Epoch Times or some article, it said, like, no, we insisted. The DNC really screwed us over by not giving us the thing. We kept telling them that we needed to see this. So, yeah, that's been refuted over. And it makes – this is the thing. I mean, it's all so frustrating because it's all BS. They just throw sand in your face and people buy into it. Just forget about whether they asked or didn't ask or who
– Right. Well, let me ask this question.
How does a private – so you've got this claim that was used to defend Hillary Clinton against WikiLeaks releases. The only reason the FBI made the claim is evidence based on someone hired by the DNC. How is that reasonable? Like, how is it reasonable?
Right.
So if they couldn't do anything, if the DNC said, we don't want you touching our servers, and the FBI couldn't do anything, they couldn't do anything. But to take evidence from somebody paid by the DNC, which then immediately they use to throw up a smokescreen against, to favor Hillary Clinton against the WikiLeaks releases, how is that possibly?
But there are two interesting points. So one, according to this woman who was in charge of the servers, they never asked for it, right? Which now you kind of better understand what they're
up to. Because they knew it was fake.
But two, what was it the DNC showed them as the screenshots? Oh yeah, those screenshots are just as good as having the servers, which we don't want to see, because the screenshots will show what we knew, which is we had no idea whether Russia. So what was the screenshot of?
Yeah, what is anything? And that was the great thing in Henry's testimony, too, that, well, they could have screenshotted all 10,000. The Russians, we don't know they stole them, but maybe they screenshotted 10,000 emails. They sat there and like, duh, 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 for like every email. 10,000 times they did a screenshot, like very likely that's how this stuff.
You know,
It's and Mueller's investigation, this is the thing, the Republicans, to me, they're in on it. I mean, there's no other way to say it. They don't want McCain's role in all this to come out.
Exactly. But Lindsey Graham.
They treat Mueller like it's like, oh, Crossfire Hurricane, that was like this coup against president. But when Stroke then moves to Mueller's team, it's obviously a continuation. And now Mueller is like Dick Tracy, his integrity.
Oh, no, you're right, because here's the thing that I have complained about since the transcripts from the Intelligence Committee testimony came out is, so you had Adam Schiff walking out after each of these meetings, after having heard CrowdStrike say, we have no evidence that it's the Russians, walks out, holds a news conference and says, it's the Russians. None of the Republicans, I mean, Devin Nunes tried, but came out and said, no. I mean,
but you have to realize Devin Nunes was suspended,
right,
and couldn't do anything for 8 months because it was an ethical violation because they said he went over to the White House. So who's in charge of the committee after that? Trey Gowdy, which is, you know, he's got his own problems. In it, but now who do you think Richard Burr is going to be replaced by on the Intelligence Committee?
I haven't even given it any thought. Do you have an idea?
You know, it's got to be like Susan Collins. You know,
no, it's a bit more.
I mean, it's not. It's a couple of them. Maybe okay. Maybe Nunes, like you said, he was suspended, and that was the issue. But I hadn't thought of Julie's point. Why didn't somebody come out and push. And not only did they not come out and push back, every time you hear one of somebody in the Senate, it's like, we swear our allegiance that the Russians hacked the DNC. Right. And again, I can only come back to six ways to Sunday.
Yeah.
Chuck Schumer's remark that basically saying that the intelligence community blackmails our politicians to do their bidding. That's what he said. They have six. He warned Trump, don't mess with them. They have six ways a Sunday to get you.
And that's all they got him.
Yeah.
And Julie's right. This makes it in. So it isn't just even to Julie's point that they didn't come out and say, wait a minute, stop. We actually don't know that the Russians hacked the DNC. They actually repeated
and said, we got to have Mueller. We all love Mueller.
Well, Trey got it.
And they passed sanctions on Russia primarily based on this, that they wrecked international relationships, moved us closer to war. I mean, I think in the end they did the Russians a favor. They're going to be more self-sufficient than we obviously are. But they did all this stuff, and they had no evidence. Like, really? There was no reason to believe any of it happened?
But I still love the point that you brought up, that they had no evidence, but Mueller was sure. He indicted 13 people for extrafiltrating the information on something.
Right, well, what kind of already knew hadn't been exfiltrated.
How do you indict somebody on that?
Which they dropped.
As soon as he started indicting people, he had no hopes of actually bringing the trial. As soon as he hired Weissman, it should have been over. But as soon as he started like indicting people, people should have been like, why are you issuing indictments to people that you can't try? Then what happens? Well, so there are two different indictments that people sometimes run together. One was the 13 Russian alleged spies who hacked the DNC. And the other was like a dozen or so individuals for the troll farms, the Facebook troll farm. That was in February. So then the February indictment, one of the companies says, hi, we'd like to be tried. We'd like to show up in court. And Mueller's like, can we get a delay on this? And he was forced to drop, ultimately, all the charges. Now we find out with, like, General Flynn, and that's been very frustrating, too. So the DOJ, so very beginning, it should have been, wait a minute, you guys. So Flynn is a high-ranking official in the new administration. The old administration, right before they go out, passes sanctions on Russia. On that very day, Flynn talks to the Russian ambassador. Seems pretty normal to me, right? And you guys wanted to get him on the Logan Act, which hasn't been prosecuted since Chuck says the Civil War last time we spoke.
1852.
Passed in 1879. This is BS. It should have been immediately clear that, like, of course.
But the Logan Act in itself says a person who's unauthorized making contact. He's authorized.
How do you get more authorized?
You know who's not authorized is just curious.
Right then, Barr should have been like, wait a minute. This is BS. So finally, it piles on. Sidney Powell comes in, and she's piling on, like, more evidence. It's garbage. And finally, we've got him, like, saying, we want to just get this guy fired. Like, what's our aim here? And Barr just quietly drops it. There's no, well, let's now, like, turn on Mueller. Let's, like, realize that Mueller set all this up. Let's look at all the lies he told. Let's look at all the evil is the only way to really say it. He's promoted. Like, just, let's view again the Mueller investigation is what it was. It was the continuation of Crossfire Hurricane. But this is the thing. There was a single plot, and it wore different hats.
Yes.
The first hat was Brennan's CIA investigation in August, right? That was separate, allegedly, from Crossfire Hurricane. So first, the plotters wore that hat. They had a team of allegedly 20 handpicked agents, like, investigating Russian influence on the campaign, which it looks like they started based on the Steele dossier. The intelligence they described sounds exactly like the Steele dossier.
No. They had a very good predicated one, which has been told many times, that simply being in a bar with an ambassador where you over a drink, you say, hey, I think somebody has some, that can trigger in Washington enormous investigation. I just slapped.
Yeah. And what happens? So nothing's being done. Like, people have to wake up that Barr is not doing anything. Barr is like, crap, I have to drop Flynn now. Why did he get Sidney Powell? Now we have to drop this. Thank God for COVID-19. This is Barr speaking. Right? Thank God for that, or else people will be paying attention. Let's just drop Flynn, Nobody will notice in a couple.
And now, what
of, where's the outrage? Where's the what happened with the Abuses Horowitz catalog? The FISA judges were supposed to be. What happened with any of that?
Wait, let me ask you a question. What do you then make of? Because you're right. So Sidney Powell, you know, I agree with you that who
we
knows.
Take a what, break.
I'm going to have that. We missed the 15 break. If we have to have a 30 break, if our BBS producers could just type it in the chat part, and then we'll do that. I miss the time. So
we could make it like a Jerry Lewis telethon.
Right, exactly. That's what it is. So what do you think saying now? Because I think he was like, okay, fine. We're going to drop Flynn. Yay, everyone move on. Okay, we'll take a break. Text me. I'm talking to our BBS producer. If you could just put it in there.
Now.
Just say break now, and we'll break now. We'll do it the hard, the easy.
Oh, wait, I got chat too.
Okay.
Oh, I see. I'm getting it here. Okay.
Okay, there you go. So let me ask you this. So what do you think, though, Barr, and we'll get back because I want to get back to the Russia, fake Russia hoax, but what do you think Barr is thinking now that Judge Sullivan completely goes rogue off the ranch and says, you can't drop it?
I can tell you that if this doesn't get interrupted by a writ of mandamus from the Circuit Court of the Supreme Court, I'm flying to Washington to watch that hearing. That would be the best thing. Well, you got Sidney Powell, you got the old lawyers from coming in Burling, you've got this wacko judge out of New York.
You're right. I think it should happen. I mean, it's better to keep it alive.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be great.
Right. To let it die. Oh, I touched my face. Sorry.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, because you're right, because on that front, Barr is like, look, we successfully buried this. But now if you're Sidney Powell, you're going to bring out everything you have. It exposes.
And she seems to be in it for more than just vindicating Flynn. She seems to be still pissed off about Arthur Anderson and like everything from the other stuff they did. So she seems, which is good. I mean, I'm
right.
She should be attorney general as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, yes.
But she's vindictive. And I mean, this in the most positive way. She's vindictive. She's angry. She's rightfully angry about what they've done. So hopefully she's going to keep pushing it. But yeah, if I think.
Well, how would you like to be heard? She now knows. I mean, she wasn't sure before. But that Emmett Sullivan's out to get her. Accused her of being a plagiarist because she took from her other older briefs a section on something. I mean, the most
you can't
asinine,
plagiarize yourself.
You can't plagiarize yourself, and nobody just does reasonable doubt or something that you write a new dissertation on what reasonable doubt is every time you do a brief. It's just asinine. So she knows he's after her, and she knows he's after his client and the judge, the former judge. I mean. Who had said that prosecutors? Previous to that, he had written an opinion that.
Oh yeah, he said that if the prosecutors decline,
this hearing is going to be wild. It's just
you're right. I hadn't actually thought of it, but it's going to be interesting and it's going to be good. That I think Sullivan made a mistake from his perspective.
You don't know federal judges.
He just wants to be the star of his show.
He's in his 70s. There's a guy. That when I was on the Court of Appeals as a clerk named Willis Ritter, and he was insane. Like, so he didn't give a he would say, Ritter would say, I want to watch the basketball game today. He was in Utah and they blacked it out. And they said, well, it's blacked out. Okay, here's an injunction telling you that.
Oh my God.
He lived across the street. He was in his 70s. He had a 19-year-old girlfriend he was shacking up with. I mean, but he didn't care. He was in his 70s. This is his last hurrah. And same for Sullivan. He doesn't care. He just doesn't. They're always going to appoint him to the Supreme Court. This is his big chance. He's going to make this a circus. And I hope the Circuit Court of Appeals doesn't stop him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
It's pure entertainment value.
And it's not just entertainment, though. It's also to keep this alive and not.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, people may disagree. I'm sure there are people out there. I know people who still think Barr's on the case and we just have to trust the plan. Like we
trust
have
the plan.
And Barr's going to just, I think it's becoming preposterous. I just think.
Well Devin Nunes came on and he says that they were going to give criminal referrals on members of the Mueller team. Right. And I kind of go, the one thing that you can count on, if you make a criminal referral to a prosecutor, which is what the Department of Justice is, about other prosecutors, the one thing will never happen is they'll go after their own prosecutors. That's their buddies. That's their friends. There's no chance.
This is the problem that the place we're at is like everyone's head is kind of like, well, they did this to the Republican presidential candidate and that, but they've been doing, this is just normal yeah. stuff for them. They just, and we put up with it for years and years and years. I mean, in a way, it's the press's fault because they report it and then they let it go. They don't like, we put up with this kind of stuff. So Weissman, who Mueller hired, I mean, to me, it's just really incredible. So he, all of his convictions, I think there were a dozen of them against Arthur Anderson, were overturned by the 9-0 vote in the Supreme Court. Right. Everyone from Scalia, who was live at the time, to Ginsburg, Ruth Ginsburg, all agreed that this was garbage. So everything went on. In the meantime, like the company went out of business, 85,000 people had lost their jobs. You'd sort of think that people would say, hey, Weissman, you're in trouble. You've like abused your power here. But no, they it's exactly what you guys said. They defend each other. It's a crime. To me, it's like the DOJ, to be honest. It's a crime family.
It's like when we keep, and we'll get you on, your head will explode for this, but it's like when we keep asking Fauci, you know, what do the projections look like and what do the models for coronavirus look like? It's like,
And this is the thing, too, you see in both cases, that someone puts, they put an expert badge on someone's head, and Sean Henry can then say, well, we have no evidence, but trust me, it's my expert opinion. Or Fauci can say, this is my expert opinion, and no one says, hello, you were wrong.
Let me interrupt for a second. You know, a lot of the people are saying that wait a minute here. The FBI is to investigate crimes. It's not to
commit them.
It's not to create them, right? And we had Trevor Aronson on, who's part of the Intercept, Glenn Greenwald, and he wrote this great book, Inside the Terror Factory, How the FBI Manufactures about 90% of the terror cases. You know,
entrap the person.
Well, they entrap them, but they find some nutty guy who's got a 12 IQ on the internet who says,
in
his basement, saying, I love Islamic warriors. And then they surround him with people who are handing him bombs and guns and everything else. And then the person himself would have a tough time walking outside on his own, much less doing a terror plot. And then they get him to do it. Okay, now walk over here. And in one case, the guy said, I won't do it. They still indicted him.
If you say you won't do it, then they're going to come down on you. So it's the Ruby Ridge guy. Like, this guy had gone to a white supremacist meeting. He didn't like the group. The FBI arranged to buy an illegal shotgun from him, which turned out wasn't illegal. He wasn't even convicted of that in the end of the day. He was found innocent because they were angry that he wouldn't join an Aryan group he wasn't a member of as an infiltrator. They're angry. And they wind up like shooting his wife in the face, killing her, invading his property.
Kill your son. Yeah.
Right.
Killing his son. Yeah. So they come on the property. A surveillance team comes on the property. And whatever magical device they had, in case a guy who's living on our property in the middle of nowhere happens to have one dog or 10 dogs that's going to mask them from the dogs, wasn't working. Dog notices. They kill the dog. The son comes out. Of course, he has no idea what's going on. These guys killed this dog. He fires back. They kill the son, shot in the back, by the way. The son was shot in the back. Later, then they like, and while they were camped outside, so then they're in the house with the dead mom and the dead son. At this point, the mom has been shot in the face, too, with the dead son. And the FBI agents are outside calling the mom's name, whose dead body is in the house, being tended to by like the 12-year-old daughter saying, Melissa, whatever her name is, we have blueberry pie for you. The FBI agents are like standing outside mocking the 12-year-old girls whose mom they shot in the face.
And the shooter gets indicted by state people, and they do all these things to get around it and make sure that he's never held responsible for anything. And so who is his pro bono attorney? None other than A.G. Barr. That was his pro bono attorney.
You guys are depressing me. You're depressing me. Hey, listen.
Now, Barr is, I even feel taken in. But when I found out about his role in defending the sniper, so his argument was federal agents are immune from killing people because, accidents happen.
There you go.
Barr is like a phony. That's the thing. It's like he knows how to get up and if you're kind of an intelligent conservative, he knows what to say to kind of get to you. Make you go, yeah. Like, so he gets up and goes, I'm troubled by all these COVID-19 violations of abuses. And you finally hear somebody saying it, and you're like, yeah, that's great. Or he gets
Michael, we got to take a break. Gotta
Hang
take
on a
break.
Second. Okay. We gotta take a break. Let me let folks know we're talking with investigative blogger Michael Tao. You can get all of his stuff at aclearerpicture.net. Plus, he's a new columnist for Red State. You've also read him on Town Hall and AM Greatness and Real Clear Politics. He's all over the place. We are Chuck and Julie. We have the Chuck and Julie show on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 3 o'clock Denver time. You can get us. Oh, there's Michael with his dog.
People can't. And my dog.
And Michael and his dog. You can get us at chuckandjulie.com. We're filling in for Karen Cataline on Spouting Off. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Chuck Bonniewell, Julie Hayden here, filling in for Karen Cataline this afternoon. We'll be on at 3 o'clock with a whole different show. And you just go to chuckandjulie.com here on BBS Radio, which has the best shows in all the podcasting world.
I can even say in the broadcasting world, too.
Okay.
This is a place to be. Our guest today is Michael Tao, investigative blogger at aclearerpicture.net. You can get all of his works. We started off talking about the incredible testimony that has been revealed, that came out years ago, that CrowdStrike, to make the final sort of pillar that the people were basing the fact that the DNC server was hacked came from CrowdStrike saying, hey, it had been hacked. We now found out that while CrowdStrike told the Washington Post they were hacked by Russians, that the reality was they actually had no evidence of that. And that's what
they just had a kind of a feeling.
Well, no, it's just
and Schiff delayed our getting us this information for years.
Oh, yeah. And frankly, and so did Lindsey Graham. I'm just going to say that. But it does beg the question then, you know, where did some of this information come from? And thus comes the specter of Seth Rich. Seth Rich was a person who worked with the Clinton campaign, who was, and some people consider, mysteriously murdered.
He was mysteriously murdered.
Yeah, he definitely was mysteriously.
That's true. And there have been some people, and as I understand it, including really Julian Assange, who have hinted that Seth Rich may have been the source of the WikiLeaks getting the anti-Hillary Clinton emails.
And what's interesting about that, they've come up now where the attorney representing a guy who got sued by the Rich family asked the FBI to give them all the material they had on Seth Rich. And they said, well, no,
we don't have zero, zippo.
We've checked everything, zero, zippo. And then Judicial Watch is making another request.
Oh, yeah.
Look at all this Seth Rich stuff.
I think when I looked at the FBI's excuse there, I actually don't think that that's one thing I don't think is such a big deal. It's the idea that they would give it to Judicial Watch, but not to the other people was already strange to me. But I think like they had said, like, look, we missed this and we didn't think it was.
Yeah.
When you look at what it was, I think that stuff has been somewhat overblown.
Although you do have Strzok and Page, you do have Strzok and Page saying though so and so quashed that, right?
Right.
I mean, yeah.
This is weirder. I mean, I would say I'm agnostic, if highly skeptical, that Seth Rich was murdered by people trying to shut him up.
Even if he was the leaker, if you're going to be walking around Washington at 4 a.m., they might have had a race to see who could kill him first, even if they wanted to.
Right.
Like you're like, you can't say, like, so a guy who looks like Seth Rich, drunk on his phone at 4 a.m. in Washington, D.C., there's no way you can rule out that he was just shot.
Well, also, exactly. There was evidence of a struggle. His knees are scraped. His hands are scraped.
Well, okay,
so there's a struggle. So if you're going to assassinate somebody, you don't bother to struggle with them. No, wait a minute. You go up to him and shoot him. And we've all watched the films on how you do this. I'm agnostic and skeptical about that. But on the other one, I see more and more stuff coming on that Seth Rich may well have been the source.
There's weird stuff. Look, the day after Seth Rich died, FEC, Federal Election Commission records show that CrowdStrike got $100,000 from the DNC the day after Seth Rich was killed. And the day after Sean Lucas was killed, the other guy who there seems to be actually less evidence that there's any reason the DNC would want to kill him. But it turns out the day after Sean Lucas died, allegedly of an overdose, another $100,000 went into CrowdStrike. And you're looking at this, you're going like,
that's what it means by the name CrowdStrike. I mean, you know, they perform.
Strike and
it's
crowd.
It's like,
John Wick body before. Shots, FBI training.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the evil.
Well, John Wick is on the payroll for CrowdStrike.
That's right.
It's hard to know. I mean, I agree totally with everything Chuck said. I think it's like, I'm agnostic. There's no way you can rule out that it wasn't. Just he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But there's a lot of like little things that are piling up that are hard to. Maybe they're total coincidences. Who knows?
The thing is CrowdStrike then, just to set to put perspective, admits that they have no evidence that Russia hacked the DNC. But there is, meanwhile, a lot of evidence that a Hillary campaign staff person did.
Just look at the emails themselves. This is the thing. It's like they're. It's everything is so imprecise. People aren't dealing with the facts. There's two different sets of releases. There's the DNC emails and the Podesta emails. The DNC emails, the ones they're claiming were hacked, the only negative information in them was about Bernie being cheated. There was nothing else negative about Hillary Clinton in the emails the Russians allegedly hacked. They came from 10 email accounts of little-known DNC people. The most well-known guy is Louis Miranda, who I'm sure almost no one has heard of. So how did the Russians even get into these accounts without passwords by hacking the server? Like, we have no story has been even told. Like, normally you'd need, even if you get in there, how do you get into their email? These people's email? Why did the Russians like pick these 10 accounts? And why did they only release information about cheating Bernie? Doesn't it make more sense that even if the Russians were involved, that also somebody who was concerned about the cheating of Bernie, a Bernie bro, was involved? So the Podesta emails contained cheating Bernie and everything else evil about Hillary Clinton and incompetent about. It's like a minefield of stuff about Hillary Clinton. But don't run those together, because those were stolen by they got Podesta to give away his password with a trick. The emails that the Russians were supposed to hack were only concerned with cheating Bernie. Why would they? So they didn't. They could have got Donna Brazile's account.
Yeah, right.
Why didn't they release anything from there? Why these 10 lower? So Luis Miranda was communications. The other, I think six more were from finance and two were low level researchers.
Right.
Those are the 10 people in the DNC emails. Why are the Russians after these guys?
You're right. And what they've done is they've successfully changed the narrative or controlled the narrative that most people don't realize there were two different sets of emails to make. And to make it clear,
it's very hard to keep track of. When I was first writing on this, it seems weird to me, but I remember when I was first writing on this, keeping those two things straight in an article without screwing up, it was like hugely actually difficult.
Thing back to Seth Rich, somebody sent us a book, and one of the things about Seth Rich is he's got a former, I don't know if it's a girl who's a friend or a girlfriend who was, and Seth Rich was apparently upset. He was helping, so when people wanted to go vote in the primary, right, they could put in their address and it would send them to where to vote, only it wasn't really sending them actually to a polling place. It was sending them to like a Hillary Clinton place where then they would help them vote, right? And he was apparently
annoyed
mad at that, saying that's not fair, right? And he didn't realize that that's what the software did. But it goes back exactly to your point that the actual DNC emails that CrowdStrike now admits they had no evidence were hacked by any Russians, the only bad information in that was that they felt that Bernie was being cheated. All that other stuff.
And no story has been told about how they even got into these. Like, you use this word hack and it just papers over the complexities involved. They had to actually get into all these emails. I mean, again, CrowdStrike claims, okay, they could read all the emails, so they could have screenshotted every single thing. But we actually know that the files WikiLeaks released aren't screenshots. They're translated into the email language, out of the email language into the standard program. So that's wrong anyway, but it's absurd. They didn't screenshot 10,000 emails. No. So we don't even have any idea how they got in. And we know, however they did it, it's when CrowdStrike was monitoring the system. So that's another thing. If the Russians had hacked these files, you'd sort of think all these files being illegally leaving the DNC server would have excited CrowdStrike software, and they would have started. On the other hand, if some leaker with actual privileges downloaded them, that wouldn't have registered probably with any.
Let me ask you this. Stopping Julie is taking my mind off of it. Senate Intelligence Committee, headed by Burr until he's caught cheating on stock trades, has come out with a report. I've never seen the report that confirms, bipartisan, that the Russians interfered with our 2016 election. I wonder what that's based on. Have you seen that report?
Their report on the ICA, I've read. So they have a report on the January 17 ICA where they say, they buy the conclusions. It's also really critical, and some of it is so critical. So there's a House report and a Senate report. And I think if I'm remembering right, they're both very critical, but then at the end of the day, they go, it's fine. It happened. I mean, really, you have to me, it's inescapable that these senators, and they're scared of something because they're saying stuff. That there's no evidence. You read the unclassified version of the ICA, more than half of it literally is a thing they tacked on that was written in 2012, I think, 5 years.
Right, it has nothing to do with anything.
On Russia Today, which was cut and pasted from the web itself, right?
Well, you're
reading the evidence. Some of their evidence is, in this newspaper article, Putin said he didn't like Hillary Clinton. And it's you're quoting newspaper articles? Really?
What is the Senate Intelligence Committee? They can't just say, we refer to the ICA and that's it. They're supposed to be looking at this closely. What do they look at closely to come up with Russian interference in the election? We know that the server thing is BS.
Which CrowdStrike admits.
Which CrowdStrike
admits. You got all the Obama administration.
Yeah, we have no evidence that Russians hacked it, and they made no attempt to interview the only person who knows who says the Russians didn't. He didn't get it from the Russians.
Right. And so I agree with you, Michael. My big question, as more of this has come out, is, you saw a couple of senators and some people in Congress come out and push back a little bit, but no one, and they would say, we can't leak because it's classified. But you had Schiff coming out openly leaking, right? You've got the Obama administration unmasking everybody and their mother and then leaking it illegally. And all of a sudden, these pure Republican senators are
like voting. Honestly, this is a tangent, but when you have mail ballot elections and you have ballot harvesting. Well, I've worked with campaigns that have Democrats and Republicans on them. You tell a Democrat, we got to get 40 ones in. They go, oh, yeah, okay. But you can only collect 10 yourself. Oh, yeah, sure, boss. And they consider it voter suppression. Republicans, they go, oh, okay, 10. Yeah, that's it. I'm done for the day. I can't do anything more.
That's the thing. It's they cheat and our side goes they're cheating. That's fine. We can live with that. We're not going to cheat back, and we can live with the fact that they're cheating all over the place. The lying. I mean, and it's getting sickening to hear this. We're going to investigate. We're going to do something. We're still waiting on Tom Cotton was going to investigate Dianne Feinstein for.
Oh, that's for right. Steve that's Lassie right. Well,
I'm still waiting.
Somewhere?
I'm still kind of like crickets, looking out my window, waiting for. Dianne Feinstein to be nothing is going to happen. The thing is, it's we need to throw all these people out. We need to close down The DOJ, the FBI returned law enforcement to the local authorities like it was supposed to be. There wasn't supposed to be this superstructure of federal law enforcement on top of local law enforcement, which now takes precedence, which again, Barrick says, and by the way, our federal guys, they can kill your citizens. They're immune. Legally,
they're immune. You're local, right, you could be prosecuted. Hey, Michael, we're going to take one more break, so we're going to put you on hold right now. You're listening to Karen Cataline spouting off, Chuck Bonnywell and Julie Hayden filling in. Chuck and I have our own show on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday right here at BBS Radio, 3 o'clock Denver time. Just go to chuckandjulie.com. Our guest today, Michael Tao with theclearerpicture.net, and we will be right back after this.
This is Karen Cataline, host and producer of Spouting Off. Got an opinion, a guest suggestion, or a show tip? Follow me on Facebook or Twitter and let me know your thoughts. All you need is to know how to spell my name. It's the same on Twitter, Facebook, and www.karencataline.com. Karen is spelled the normal way, no goofy Y's or Q's, K-A-R-E-N, and Cataline is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Want more Spouting Off? You can find the complete archive of Spouting Off shows at www.karencataline.com. All my op-eds and blog posts are there, too. That's www.karencataline.com. Thanks for listening, and if you have a moment, please spread the word about Spouting Off.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Chuck Bonnywell, Julie Hayden, subbing for Karen Cataline. We've got our own show, Chuck and Julie, at BBS at 3 o'clock. We invite you to join that along with great Karen's great show every once a week.
She's on every Friday, noon to 1 Mountain Time. We are on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 3 to 4 Mountain Time. Just go to chuckandjulie.com.
All right, we've got Michael Tao. He's a columnist for Red State. He's an extraordinarily investigative blogger. You can get all of his works on clearpicture.net. And we've got today talking about the amazing revelations.
And he was right all along.
And he was right all along, which is a good thing to be.
I knew about CrowdStrike before it was cool to know about CrowdStrike.
Yeah.
That's one thing. It was very hard, like in 2018, he even broached the subject because he had to have who the hell's CrowdStrike? We don't know. Now people are know enough that you can sort of, it's a lot easier.
Well, I'm going to go back to that time because I remember we were talking, Chuck and I did a show, we had a show on KNUS Radio, and we had Victor Davis Hanson, right, who is a columnist like you at AM Greatness, and he was the first one that raised this. He goes, you guys got to look at this column by Michael Tao. Mm-hmm. He says there never even was any Russia hack. So I read it, and I'm like, holy cow. The essential premise of the entire Mueller probe, of the entire everything, was just fraudulent, and they all knew it from the get-go.
But the best part about
all the journalists, all the mainstream journalists, if they were doing what they claimed to be doing, everybody would know this. Nobody would be believing in this Russian nonsense. It's a failure. This is the thing. It's like we've got a press where failure is not punished. Doesn't matter how wrong you are. So they can say, Trump has no chance at the Republican nomination. Wait, Trump's going to have to resign the Republic. Wait, Trump has no electoral path. Wait, Trump's going to crash the stock market. Wait, Trump's going to be evicted by Mueller. Wait, blah, 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 blah. They can be wrong. And no one says you're fired, dude. You've been wrong over and over and over again. Same thing with our political class. Fauci, he totally screwed up our response to AIDS, right? He exaggerated the threat of AIDS just like he did with COVID-19. It was all predictable. Doesn't matter because in a bureaucracy, it's not doing your job is bad, doing the official job. That you'll get punished if you actually do a good job. In a bureaucracy, it's ass kissing and getting good press. Those are the only thing that matters.
Right.
And that's what our government is being run on. That's what our national journals are being run on. And frankly, we're screwed. I mean, there's no
Well, tell us about your Fauci article.
Yeah,
what's
that
it
you're
about?
Working on for Red State.
Yeah, I'm just trying to point out, like, so to me, it's like this guy, like Hitler must be going, man, Fauci really gave the United States, because I didn't manage to do anything like this in the Japanese. All we did was bomb Pearl Harbor. We never even really affected the mainland. I'm like, but this guy's got the whole country on his on their knees, and it's all he lied. He it's not even just he's incompetent. So he said in March he ginned us up for to get us prepared for this like quack medicine of, yes, we've got this new thing called social distancing, never tried in history, never been mentioned in history. And what you do is you do a half-assed job of isolating healthy people. You let them go to Walmart, but you close down everything else, right? And there's now the evidence is in. It doesn't look like it made things worse. I mean, in a way, we're lucky, because it could have easily, for all anybody knew. So this is the thing people have to realize. Scientists have no idea how the flu is even transmitted.
Right.
They have no idea whether these measures were working would even work against the flu. I've actually looked at all the research, and there's not much.
None.
They have no idea. So Fauci comes up and says, yeah, we're going to try. The only studies on this have been done on the flu. They're totally inconclusive. We're going to do it, even though the obvious cost. But we're not going to even look at the cost. I'm Fauci. I'm not even the medical cost. So I'm not even going to consider the medical cost of taking the entire medical system and focusing it on one disease and shutting down. So I have two friends recovering from cancer. Their follow-up appointments have all been canceled. They cannot get in touch with
me. Oh, right. Well, and
how many people are dying? I really want to have a thing. Death by Fauci, a new category.
Death by Fauci.
Well, you know,
and I want to have the same inflated criteria that they use for COVID-19. So anyone who's at all might have died of something that would have been treated if Fauci hadn't.
Or even anybody you haven't seen for a week or two, right? Like I said, it's a Monty Python. I'm not dead yet. It's
so here's another Fauci.
Oh, we've got about 4 minutes.
We got 4 minutes. So here in Colorado, it's coming up more and more. They found some guy who had a 0.55 alcohol level, which is, you know, twice what will kill you. No, the legal is
0.5. 0.5 is crazy. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure if he was Indian because they can tolerate a lot of alcohol, but 0.55
is been a big guy at least.
Yeah. And so they said, well, he died from, you know,
the
coroner said he died from toxic alcohol. And they changed it here in Colorado to COVID-19.
The
health department did, because, you know, we have another investigative reporter. Who's all these nursing homes, or everything's changed to COVID-19. So they asked Fauci, I think yesterday or the day before, you think 80,000 is a realistic number? He says, no, there's far more real COVID-19.
As soon as we get done changing all of them.
Yeah. So, you know, there's reports like child molestation. It's way up. You've got the emergency room physicians, YouTube center. They said, look, you got angry people who can't earn a living locked in the home with kids. Child sexual molestation is like way up. The kid has to get COVID-19 from his abuser for Fauci to even give a damn, right? It doesn't even like matter. None of this gets discussed. The guy, he's literally terrorized the nation, and he's done more damage than we don't even know when this is going to end. The economy isn't like a spigot where you like turn it off, and then a couple months later, when the winter's over, you turn it back on and the water comes out. We have no idea if we're ever going to recover. The restaurant
industry. But the key for Fauci, as it was for Himmler, Himmler just had this bookish quality. He looked like, you know, a nerdy little accountant, right? And that's what Fauci, I mean, death by Fauci, but Fauci go, oh, it's the Fauci. He must be telling us.
And also Fauci's like his ass kissing of journalists. Like he called Chris Cuomo every single night when Cuomo was like, that's Fauci's thing.
Right. No, it is.
And that's why the press on him, some of it is incredible. So I'm reading these sycophantic stories. One is about how he's a runner, but a lot of them brag about his AIDS predictions. And you're reading this and does anybody realize none of this happened?
Right.
Like they're literally like bragging about it. Like, so he was telling people AIDS is going to spread out into the population and like wreak havoc. Look, it's an established fact that you cannot get AIDS unless you get someone else's bodily fluids mixed in with your blood. You can't get AIDS from a handshake. You can't get AIDS from a lick of kiss. It doesn't happen. But he was pushing that line. And then he got tens of billions of dollars in tax money out of Congress to look for a cure. And he failed. People came up with it because he was focused on a vaccine.
Right.
That's his like only
mental thing. He's probably getting stuck in a vaccine thing. Hey, Michael, listen, our time is up. Thank you, as
always. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank
great.
You.
Great to Michael talk to you, Michael.
Michael, you guys. Thanks.
Take care.
Thank you. Watch for him on Red State. Read his stuff at aclearerpicture.net. Chuck Bonnemal and Julie Hayden here. Tune in today at 3 for the Chuck and Julie Show on Mountain Time, or go to chuckandjulie.com.
All right. And good to talk with Karen's audience. And it's been a great fun.